We're taking you behind the scenes with entrepreneurs that run product-based businesses. There is so much information out there tailored towards service providers, so we have carved out a space just for you. The creative entrepreneurs making and selling physical goods. We're firm believers that everyone has a story to share, and there is so much we can learn from each other's business journey. Whether you are just starting out or a seasoned business owner, this podcast will shed light on new strategies, inspiration, and action steps to help you grow your product-based business. Hey friends, welcome back to Proof to Product. I'm your host, Katie Hunt, and I am so excited for you to listen into today's episode with May Pock. She's the owner of two businesses, Creative Hive Co. and Tiny Hands, which is a jewelry line. And May teaches makers, artists, and designers how to create a handmade business from scratch and grow it into a full-time income. And she uses consistent traffic and sales to our websites to do this. So May has been running her creative handmade small business since 2006, and she started coaching in 2014. In 2019, May taught her husband how to start his own online store selling personalized art for the family, and he now makes over $55,000 a month in sales, which is pretty incredible, right? So May's goal is to help us make consistent income from selling our products online without relying too much on social media, which is what we are talking about today. On today's episode, May is breaking down the four steps to pitching your products to media outlets. And spoiler alert, these are the same steps that you can use when pitching your products to wholesale accounts, when pitching your art to licensing, or even collaborations with influencers and other brands. We talked about proactive marketing outreach versus reactive marketing, and we talked about Facebook ads. Some of the fears that younger brands have around paid advertising, why May recommends learning, testing, and even DIYing your ads rather than hiring an agency to help you. And we talked about why it is so incredibly important to know your numbers and ensure that your products are priced right before you jump into paid advertising. Now, before we get started, I do want to let you know that May recently taught a training inside of our Proof to Product Labs community where she shared her holiday sales strategy with us step by step. She talked about how to structure the offer, tech tools that she uses, and she shared past results that she's gotten through utilizing these strategies. One of our members, Jenny Ingram, said, "This training is gold," and I have to agree with her. This is the type of high-quality trainings, coaching, and tools that you get inside of our Proof to Product Labs program. If you are interested in joining our 12-month group coaching program and accessing this holiday sales strategy training from May, I want you to head to proofToProduct.com/labs and join us. Like that training, today's podcast episode is packed with so much tactical, strategic advice and concrete examples. So be sure to grab a notebook and let's dive in. Hey, May, thanks so much for joining me today.
Hey, I'm so glad to be here. It's always so fun to chat with you, Katie.
I know, you too. I should preface this conversation by saying that you and I met in a mastermind a couple years ago, and it was so fun to be able to, I mean, I had seen your work, I knew about you, and it was just fun to connect with you on that like more higher level of like, we're both working on our businesses and here's what we're trying to tackle.
Yes, so, same. I had known about you before joining that mastermind too. And so when we were both in there, I was like, I get to work with Katie.
Well, and also just knowing that we have an overlap in our communities to some degree, although you're teaching different things than I'm teaching. And I felt like it was so synergistic. So yes. I appreciate all of that. Okay. So I would love to jump into some of your history here because let me back up a minute. As someone who has had both a product-based business and you teach and mentor other makers, artists, and designers, what do you feel is the biggest mistake that you're seeing around product-based businesses as they are trying to grow and scale?
The biggest mistake. Okay. I mean, the biggest mistake is there are several mistakes that are popping up in my head, but there is one that is sticking out like a sore thumb. And I will say that it is that people create in product-based businesses. So a lot of what we consider marketing, right, is doing all the social media, Instagram, Facebook, creating email newsletters, just taking photos to post everywhere. A lot of that is what I consider content creation. And as a maker with a physical product business, I haven't always seen that content model is not necessarily the best strategy to take. I have seen some businesses do it very well. For example, there are a lot of bath and body, skincare, where there's some level of education that you can give to your audience that can be useful to them. Or say you're in a parenting niche and you sell like children's clothing, then I can see where content really can really, I guess, give color to your business and make it useful. And actually have it be a thing where random strangers would want to read your article or actually learn advice from your Instagram post or what have you. But a lot of physical product makers were just making things like jewelry, things that look pretty, stationery. And even with stationery, there is a whole organizational thing that you could create content around that. But that is what I've seen. So the biggest mistake is not to beat around the bush. But what I have seen is people get too stuck in the creation mode. You know, they're making their website look pretty and they're spending so much time on product photography, which you should do all of those things. But there will come a point where you have to realize that you're kind of hiding behind your computer. And what really needs to happen is the actual like reaching out to people, having them come over to your website. Because without the traffic to your website, no one's going to buy your stuff. And I believe a lot of that starts with reaching out to people. And you could do that in a variety of ways. So to give you a few examples, one way you could do that is if Instagram is your place, then one thing you should be doing is not just posting a photo, putting some hashtags on it, but actually taking that one step further and reaching out to other people that could be your ideal customer. So going to hashtags that you think your ideal customers are using and then seeing who uses those hashtags. And then if you see someone that you think could be your ideal customer on Instagram, then just start a conversation with them. Like their posts and then like leave some comments, meaningful ones, of course. So that, you know, that is an act of outreach. And that will, when you do that enough, it will take a lot of time. When you do that enough, though, it will come back and translate into sales and traffic. Then the other way that I like to do, I feel like is a better use of time, is media outreach. So going out and actually reaching out to magazine editors, to influencers, to YouTubers, bloggers, people, I don't know what the term is for people who, or websites like Huffington Post, news sites, I guess, BuzzFeed. Those aren't really blogs, but they are really big websites that if you can get your product as like a featured product on a product roundup or whatever sort of article, you know, BuzzFeed, they do so many listicles, the top 10, blah, blah, blah for blah, blah, blah. If you get on one of those, you will definitely get a lot of traffic and sales, depending on what website you get on. But that act of outreach is what is important. And I think that's where most people don't get to that part.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I like how you distinguish between the reactive marketing that we're doing, you know, the publishing the content on social media, because we feel like we need to be doing that. And I do think it can yield positive results. But the proactive marketing outreach, like you're talking about, of connecting with customers, reaching out to them to have authentic conversations, and then the press outreach. So I'd like to dig into that press outreach a little bit more to hear how you've been using it, because I do think it's a little bit hard for people to understand how to leverage it. Yes, they would love to be in a gift guide, but like, how do they get started with that? Like, what were kind of the initial steps you took to start pitching yourself to the press, basically?
Okay. Let me talk through the steps. Step zero is to get your mindset in shape to start doing press. Because I know a lot of people, and myself included, depending on who it is I'm reaching out to, but in the very beginning, I was very scared of reaching out to magazine editors. And I always had all these fears of rejection, fears that people reply to me and say like, oh, your product sucks. No, I don't want it. No one's ever said that. That's never happened.
No.
So nice. And there was a lot of that and a lot of me feeling like, oh, I'm not there yet. And feeling like I need to be established before I reach out to people. And even that's not true. You don't have to already be successful. You don't have to already have a million Instagram followers for people to want to talk about you or to share your product with their audience. You just need to have a good product with good photos. And it helps to have a good website and good branding, because then whoever it is you're reaching out to can trust you and can feel good about promoting you to their audience. So right. A lot of it's a mindset thing. We could have a whole podcast episode just talking about that, but I think in a nutshell, practice makes perfect. Pitching is a muscle. You know, the more you do it, the easier it gets. And one of my students that I teach pitching to, she actually had a really great way of dealing with this. And she believes that instead of pitching to just one person at a time, where it feels like the stakes are so high, you're actually pitching to a lot of people at once. So like reaching out to 10, 20, 30 different people at once. So it doesn't feel like, oh, you're putting all your eggs in one basket. And if that one person doesn't get back to you, then, oh no, I'm a failure. So you're trying to avoid that from happening when you do reach out to a lot of people at once. So
yeah,
I would say that's step zero. Then step one is to do the research on figuring out who it is you want to reach out to. The easiest thing I think to do with this is to go look out for other businesses that you know are already successful, that have gotten a lot of press, and that share a similar aesthetic as yourself. It doesn't have to be like, I sell jewelry, oh, I have to look for someone else who sells jewelry. No, it's the same aesthetic. And then to see where they've been featured in, and then you just want to pitch yourself to all those same places, because it's very likely that that media outlet, they're going to, you know, they talk about the same style because that's what their audience is, that's what their niche is. So it's very likely that if they featured a quote unquote competitor, that they will also likely feature you. So yeah, that's the research step. And then the step two is actually crafting the email to that person. And this can really be very simple, but the biggest mistake where I've seen people make here is they make it all about themselves. And it really should come from a place of, here's what I can do for you. I know you're looking for products for some sort of gift guide that you're working on. Here's my product for consideration. Just because, bear in mind that a lot of these magazines and websites, they're content creators, and they are always looking for content. And your job, I suppose, as the shop owner, is that you can help make that person's lives and jobs a lot easier by introducing your work to them. So that's, I think, touching back to step zero two with the mindset thing. If you can put yourself in that position where, like, you're not actually selling someone anything, you're actually helping someone. So That helps me feel better about the act of sending out that email. So then you're going to write that email out, and it should really be sweet and short and simple, straight to the point. It should have a call to action. It should be personalized to that person you're reaching out to. And then step three is to follow up, because I always tell people, don't expect anyone to respond to you after that first email. Just don't expect it. And I think that's the other biggest mistake people make with this process, is they're like, well, I reached out to one person once and I didn't hear a response. And that is normal. That is totally normal.
It's totally normal. And I'm hearing so many synergies in like your steps that you're talking about, in terms of how we're pitching to wholesale,
yes,
how we're pitching to collaboration,
yes,
how we're pitching to anything. And you're absolutely right. If we're not following up, like, we're leaving the opportunity, we're closing the door, basically. We're not leaving the door open for potential future things, right?
Yeah. And this is actually how I agree with you. I feel like pitching is just a great skill to learn how to do anyway. And it applies to all those things you just said. It's exactly the same process. I use this pitching technique to get myself on Creative Live, on that teaching platform where So many other celebrity influencers have been on. And it's the same process. So that's step three, is following up. You have to follow up with the person. Follow up as many times as you feel comfortable. If it's not over email in that first way that you reached out to them, then find them on Instagram, find them on LinkedIn, find them on Twitter, and build that connection from there as well on the different platforms. And I would say that's kind of it at that point. If you've reached out a lot of times already and they still haven't gotten back to you, then move on to the next person.
Yeah,
it really is. I do think doing this in batches and not just focusing on one person really does make that a lot easier. But yeah, that's kind of the steps as a whole in general.
Well, thank you, one, for breaking that down so clearly and concisely. I agree with everything you said. The other thing I want to acknowledge here too is when you're pitching the press particularly, there is a longer lead time for you to see the fruits of that labor, right? So for example, gift guides that you were talking about, when are you typically pitching those? In the summer, right? Or earlier?
Yeah, I think summertime is a good time. It's been a while since I've pitched a gift guides at this point. This is the beauty of getting press, is like once you've gotten enough press, you just kind of level up and you stay at that new level and you just don't really need to do it anymore. So unlike social media, I keep knocking on social media. They're But you know, with social media, it's like you have to constantly give it posts and content and you have to keep doing it. And if you stop doing it, then it stops bringing you any benefit or traffic or sales. But the nice thing about media outreach is like once you get your business in a few big, really big places, they constantly, like the brand awareness, like can you imagine how many people have picked up an Everyday with Rachel Ray magazine? I thought of that just because that was one of my biggest media placements. But sorry, to answer your question, so gift guides, I would say, yeah, June, July is a good time to start pitching for those. A lot of them do work on like a 4 to 6 month lead time. So exactly. Yeah, if it's like October and you're trying to get stuff for a holiday gift guide in a print magazine, especially if it's a national print magazine, then I would say it's too late. But at that point, then pitch for Valentine's Day, right? Or Mother's Day or St. Patrick's Day. Having said that, I also don't want you to feel like, oh, you know, it's too late. I can't do anything about that now, because there's all of this digital media that you can reach out to that have much shorter lead times.
Yeah.
Those guys work like 1 month in advance, you know, as it's not a lot. So if right now is a good time, might actually be too soon, because I think right now they might be doing a lot of, depending on who it is you're reaching out to. But right now, I guess when this episode comes out, they might be talking about like Thanksgiving or Halloween, you know, depending on when this comes out. But yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting too. I just think it's important for people to acknowledge that the print publications have a much longer lead time. The digital stuff, you know, the online gift guides and things like that, there's a ton of opportunity there. And it's usually on a much shorter timeline. So if you have the assets ready, the stories, the images, the product, you know, all of that stuff ready to give, people are constantly looking for more of that to share with their audiences. They need to like feed that content beast too that we're talking about. I want to go back to something you said of once you start to get this media outreach and this coverage, it does level up your business to a different height where then you start to get more people. It's the visibility component, and you also get more sales because of that visibility, but it also leads to more opportunities. Would you agree?
Yes, absolutely.
Like you mentioned Creative Live. I taught for Creative Live too. And I will tell you that after I taught those four classes, and this was back in 2016, I started getting requests for speaking at all sorts of different conferences and stuff. And it's the same way with pitches or like with media opportunities. People will see it and then you'll start to get other requests for things. I'm sure you've experienced the same, right?
Absolutely. And I like to say the more press you get, the more press you get. And it's at that point where we get inundated with all the people that reach out to us. And that's a nice position to be in, right? When you don't have to be the one reaching out to people, but now they're reaching out to you, which is nice.
It is nice. I know you've also leveraged Facebook ads for your business. And I know that's something you teach other product businesses about. You know, do you think this is an underutilized tool for artists and makers?
Absolutely. Yes. 100%.
And why do you think they're not like attempting ads? Do you think they're intimidated? Are they worried about the budget? Like what kind of fears and worries are you seeing?
Yeah, I think both. I think for one, you really have to be priced correctly for Facebook ads or any sort of paid ads to work for you. So if you're not marked up enough with your profit margins, then you can't even begin to do Facebook ads. Mm-hmm. And then I think it really does kind of put the business hat on you. And then that ties on to with the pricing, because you have to really think about how in all forms of marketing, whatever it is you're doing, if you're doing Instagram or Facebook ads or sending out email newsletters or doing outreach, there's a cost to all of that. Even if it feels like there's no cost because it's just your energy and your effort and your time, that is a cost.
Yeah.
And there is a price tag attached to that. So once you get your head wrapped around that concept, then Facebook ads becomes, I guess, more palatable.
Yeah.
Because I think people get freaked out when they think, you know, with our business, with Tiny Hands, we have an average order cart of about $40. And that, do I need to explain what that is, or?
I think our audience knows, but basically okay. it's roughly what the normal size order that you get is around $40 in right. your shop.
Yeah. And so I would spend maybe $15 to make a sale using Facebook paid ads. And to some people who hear that, they might go like, whoa, that's way too high. That's way too much. But consider also that I suppose it's consistent sales, and it's sales that are on demand, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. You know, I know that if once my ads are mature, once your ads are mature, you can consistently rely on that for every $15, you will make a $40 sale. And because I'm priced correctly, I am still making a profit. And because I have teams that help with production and with shipping, even if the profit seems like, you know, maybe it's like a wholesale level of profit, but for a much smaller order, it might not seem like it's worth it. But to me, it is so worth it. So I think there is, I can, as I'm talking about this, I can see how it is very intimidated for people who are just getting started or people who don't have teams yet. But if you do have those things, I think it can be very effective. And I think another thing too, is there's not a whole lot of people who are artists or makers who have, there's no track record of that online. You know, there mm-hmm. a lot of the people who are doing Facebook paid ads are like really big companies, and it might feel like, oh, I have to be really big in order to do it. But I don't think that's true. I think you just have to be very, very careful about the kind, very methodical and strategic about how you do the Facebook ads, because there's so many people doing it. You can hire a ton of agencies. They're going to charge you a lot. I don't recommend that. If you're just getting started, I recommend you learn how to do it yourself first. And with the right strategy, you don't have to spend a lot of money to understand how to use it. But so, for example, you do have to be prepared to spend some money, but realize that with any kind of paid advertising, it is an investment. So, for example, my husband and I started a new business pre-COVID. I think we started this in November of 2019. And we had spent about $2,000 in paid ads before we were profitable. But once we figured out, because a lot of that money went into testing which audiences would work, testing which ads really resonated with people. And once we tested all that and we found what really worked for us, now that business is making $40,000, $50,000, $60,000, depending on the month we're looking at. So it is an investment.
Yeah.
Yeah. Most people are afraid to make that initial testing spend.
As I'm listening to you speak and knowing all I'm hearing from my community members, like, I agree. I think that number, when we talk about like the people we work with, they're artists and makers first. And I think they're intimidated by the business numbers a lot of the time. So I think one of the key takeaways I'm hearing from you is really they need to know their numbers intimately.
Yes.
Which I think you need to know anyway, regardless of ads. But with regards to ads, like if they don't know what their production costs are, if they don't know what kind of overhead is factoring into this, they don't know what kind of wiggle room they have to play with in terms of the testing or other marketing budgets, right?
Yes.
But I also like what you said too, of like, if you are going to attempt this, if this is something you want to pursue, you do want to put aside a little nest egg that's your testing fund. And acknowledge ahead of time, it goes back to the mindset stuff we talked about pitching too, that like, if I lose this money and it doesn't really yield me the results I'm wanting, it's okay, because I'm going to get data points from this that I can use.
Exactly.
Going forward.
Right. And that's another example of what I mentioned before, where when you're getting into doing paid ads, you have to put that business hat on.
Yes.
That's another very business hat sort of thing to do and say, but it definitely helps. And that was what we did when we started this new business. We took out a new credit card and we just put everything on the credit card. But we knew, because I've done this so much, that we knew that after a certain point, it will be profitable. Yeah. But you have to see it through.
Yeah.
I would say a less intimidating way to get your feet wet with paid ads is to do some simple retargeting ads.
Let's talk about that. What would that look like?
So a retargeting ad, not to get too technical about it, but you would take the Facebook pixel, which is a small piece of code, you would copy and paste it into your, actually it's not even a code anymore. If you have a Shopify website, you can literally just take the ID, which is a bunch of numbers, copy and paste that into, there's a field in your settings in your Shopify store where you can just put that in.
Nice.
And with that pixel, what it does is it starts to track all the people that come to your website, and it tracks the behavior of people as well. Did this person, what product listings did they look at? How long did they spend on your website? Did they add something to cart? And when they added something to cart, did they initiate checkout? And if they initiate checkout, did they go all the way to buy? And then did they come back to buy again next week? Like, it can track all of that stuff.
It's so crazy.
Yeah.
but incredible too.
But incredible, yes. And what you can do with that is, for all the people who come to your website, spend a lot of time on there, added stuff to cart, but then maybe never actually follow through to check out, you can actually create that as an audience on Facebook. And then you can show very specific ads to those people. So those ads would look something like, hey, we saw you came to our website and added something to cart, come back and shop with us again, with like a cute little picture of your product. You can get really creative with this. You can create dynamic ads, so you can actually show the exact product that people were looking at. That does get a little bit technical. You don't necessarily have to do that. I haven't seen that that is better than just a static image of just a really cool picture of one of your bestsellers. And those kinds of ads, the retargeting ads, you can spend as little as $1 a day on Facebook. So that's $30 a month. I like to say, if you're getting 100 visits to your site, spend $1. So if you're getting 200 visits a site, spend $2. But start with the bare minimum of $1. If Facebook won't spend that dollar if you don't have that many people coming to your site. But that's something super easy you can set up. I know there are a lot of Shopify apps that you can plug into your Shopify store to do that for you. I do recommend to get better control, because those apps probably will charge you a fee or a commission.
Yeah.
But to have better control, you can just do this yourself. Learn how to do it in the actual ads manager on the Facebook platform.
May, you are such a wealth of information. I mean, the way you have built multiple businesses to great success, and then you've advised others to do it. I really do want to commend you and say, like, you have a very thoughtful, strategic, methodic approach to how you build these businesses, but you're also not just following the crowd. Like what you were saying earlier of like, yeah, content creation is great and social media is great, but I'm going to do it my way. I'm going to do it this way. And I want to acknowledge that publicly on this episode, because I think it's very important, especially now with what everyone's been going through with COVID. Now is where we need to step into our, what is my zone of genius? How can I do this in a different way? How can I stand out from the crowd? And maybe how do I try things that feel a little messy or uncomfortable and test it out and play with it? So like, thank you for sharing that you're doing things a little different and you're not just following the standard marketing approaches. But that kind of leads me to, what are you working on next? And how are you kind of using this time to expand and stretch your wings in a different way?
Oh gosh, I have so many things. I mean, my mind's just jumping at so many.
This is why we're friends, by the way, because we both have lots and lots of ideas we want to implement.
Oh gosh. So, okay. On the tiny hand side, and this is something I've talked about on my YouTube channel. I have a series of Fiverr videos, and the Fiverr videos are all about like, hey, watch me get a logo done by 3 different logo designers on Fiverr. And here's the results. And stuff.
That's
like
cool.
That. But the story behind that was because I've told my audience on YouTube that I had a video where I'm like, oh, my Tiny Hands business is broken. It's a mess. I started that business when I didn't know anything about business. And fortunately, but what did end up happening was, so much of the business model with Tiny Hands, I feel like I can't really change, because I've created such a legacy, maybe is that the word, but it's been around for so long and people have come to know me as a certain, this is Tiny Hands. So I don't feel comfortable changing things up without potentially losing a lot of business or just shocking people, just because that business has been around since 2006. So what I am doing right now, and it's been a slow process, but I'm hoping I can get it done for the start of the holiday season, but I'm starting a sister brand to Tiny Hands. So I got a new domain name. It's called Sprinkle Charms. I think that's what it's called.
we'll make sure it's correct in the show notes.
Okay. I think it's sprinklecharms.com or something like that. It's been a while, but got a whole other thing. So the plan is we're going to sell all the same product and we're going to set up the business in what I deem to be the correct way now. And with the different pricing, the different production process, different shipping process, everything different, with just setting different expectations for our customers. So it's going to be very much a mirror business. Mm-hmm. And I'm not necessarily going to tap into my Tiny Hands audience for that. I'm just going to reach out to a new cold audience with that. And the whole goal with setting all of this up is so that I can become more Amazon friendly. And I want to get back into that.
Okay.
So there's a whole rhyme and reason to all of that, but that's what I'm working on the Tiny Hand side. And then on the Creative Hive side with my coaching business, I've been working really hard on all the aspects of making the course that I sell, a Sale a Day Business System, just to be more engaging, like creating more checklists and doing like some fun gamification things. Cause I'm all about helping our students actually go through the course and finish it. Cause you know, and this is, I'm not, everyone does this. I do this. We sign up for courses. We don't go through all of it.
And yep.
This is something where I'm like, okay, there's something I can do to help our students with that. So I've been working a lot on different ways to engage our students and to help make the experience richer for them. And then beyond that, what's even more exciting is we're slated to launch both of these things in January of 2021, but we will be launching a very high level one-on-one coaching program. So we're having people go through our standard Sale a Day curriculum, but we're giving them much more hands-on access to actually like, we will work with you to help set a lot of things up. We will have our own in-house branding designer do branding for you. Like we're going to do a lot of just, I guess we just want to make it so foolproof for people to get their business set up and to get very strong foundations and to just hold your hand and walk you through all of that. So that's one thing that I'm very excited to help with. Then the second thing is a membership program. And this is going to be very different than what Katie has. And what I intend for this to be is more of like a resource, like tools kind of platform. So I want this to be a place where like we're going to share with you a lot of templates. Like, hey, if you don't know what email newsletter to send this month, we're going to share with you a template, a script. So you just fill in the blanks and you don't have to worry about creating something from scratch. Or like, hey, if you're out of social media post ideas, here are some pictures that you can use and they're all going to be like templates on Canva. So you just like swap out your images with your own product photos. And we'll have like a copywriter that will actually draft up like some also again templates of social media descriptions and captions that you can use. So you don't have to think about all that from scratch.
Yeah.
And just generally the goal. So this isn't going to be like a platform for education. It's not really going to be teaching you how to use Instagram or how to do media outreach, but it's more of giving you the tools to just keep your business running. Because as we've talked about, there's just so much that you need to constantly put out there to keep your business going. And so my vision with the membership is to help with that aspect of it.
I love that this is more of the tactical piece of, I mean, you do so much education already, especially in your free content that you offer. So having then these tactical pieces that they can, you know, use and leverage to see through the educational piece. I think that's a great strategy,
Mary. Yeah. And I'm not sure if how we're going to do this yet, but I do have a coach on my team that is also a photographer. But my dream is to have like a pack of stock images that makers can use. I don't know about you guys, but there's so many stock images out there, but so many times I feel like they're not very suitable for makers. You know, I want to see stock images where like you're packaging up a product or you're getting ready to send off all your packages to the USPS. Yeah. You know, I want to see those images because those are relevant to us.
Oh yeah.
Or like pictures of a studio or like all your beads and your craft supplies. And I think that is underrepresented in the stock image world out there.
Oh, so. Yeah. Absolutely. I agree with you. And I think there are some great stocks, you know, stock shops, but like, you know, your audience so well and you know what they need. I mean, down to the Canva templates, the emails, these kind of stock images. I'm excited to see what you come out with next. Well, where can people find you online if they want to learn more from you or join this membership or coaching program when it comes out? We will be sure to double check the links and put them all in the show notes for you.
Yes. I think the best way, if you want to find me online, is just to Google my name, M-E-I-P-A-K, MAPAK. A lot of the things that you'll find me from there will come up just because I do so many different things. You can, the jewelry business is tinyhandsonline.com. Once you go onto the website, there are social media links you can find at the top. Same with Creative Hive. The website is creativehiveco.com. If you're interested in the coaching program or the membership, just send us an email. Just say like, hey, we're interested. That's may@creativehiveco.com. That's our email address. Just say you're interested and we'll put you on a wait list. But I think that would be, yeah, that would be the best way to reach out.
Awesome. May, you are just a pleasure to chat with. Thank you so much for offering just such an in-depth look at pitching the media and Facebook ads and just how you've grown your own business. It's just been fun to watch. And also thank you just for sharing so openly with everybody here mm-hmm. today.
Thank you, Katie. Thanks for giving me a platform to talk about it. I love talking shop.
I do too. I do too. We need to get together in person once we can with COVID because I know you're local. All right. Isn't May incredible? I feel like she and I could have talked shop for hours and hours. Some of the biggest takeaways I want you to think about as we sign off here are threefold. One, work on that mindset. Don't be afraid to take risks or promote yourself in new and different ways. As May said, practice makes perfect. So if something feels uncomfortable at first, keep doing it and you'll grow more comfortable with it, right? Two, know your numbers. I want you to know your production costs, your profit margins, your expenses, and I want you to revisit these numbers regularly for so many reasons. But particularly for this episode, they will help you make decisions about marketing budgets and paid advertising opportunities that you can take advantage of, right? They will also help you make bigger picture decisions in the business. So definitely know those numbers. And lastly, you do you. May look to media outreach to gain traction, visibility, and sales for her brand. She didn't look to the normal marketing channels to do that, right? So think about ways that you can step outside the normal marketing channels, social media, email, and all of that to proactively reach your customers and your audience. Now, be sure to check the show notes for all of May's links and her emails if you want to get on that wait list for her upcoming membership or mastermind. She also has an incredible YouTube channel and a training for direct-to-consumer sales that I encourage you to check out. And if you're interested in working with me, I want you to look into our Proof to Product Labs program. This is my 12-month group coaching program where you will learn from me and other product-based business experts. You'll also connect with a robust community of peers. We tackle a new topic each and every month, and I have live trainings, live group coaching sessions, and live coffee chats with our community. So three different touch points every month to meet face-to-face online. Head to proofyourproduct.com/labs to learn more. And just thank you. Thank you for joining me today and listening to the very end. If you found this episode helpful, make sure to share it with a friend. That's all I've got for you guys today. Talk soon.